Hello and welcome to episode 64 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
Aka Retro.
Okay, and this week we're going to be discussing several things, including Ubisoft cancels Uplay Passport effective immediately. EA commissions geeks. E4 commissions geeks. Sorry, it's A4. Yeah, it kind of works. But yeah, E4 commissions geeks, a new reality TV show. That would be bad if it was EA. Mm. But all new Adventures of Morph from Aardman Animations by Peter Lord on Kickstarter. And our feature for today, are we expecting too much from gaming?
But first up, that Uplay thing. Oh god, thank you Ubisoft. Thank you for getting rid of that. Not that it's affected me that badly, but I'm hoping it means in future there'll be less compulsion for me to have to like play a console game and be signed into Uplay, and oh my god, why I keep forgetting my passes for the damn thing. I don't know how, and then they got hacked and had to reset it, and oh fuck's sake.
What really annoys me though is they expect you to type in your email address and password on a console. If it takes you 5 hours to do it with that, if you haven't got a keyboard.
Yep.
That's a slight exaggeration.
Because Warner Brothers is doing that, and now with Batman.
Yes.
With the Warner Brothers ID. And apparently I'd set one up.
Oh, they're not.
They have. Yep. And I set one up before, 10 minutes, trying to figure out the bloody password to it, because I haven't used it.
Meanwhile, I'm pretty sure I might have set up a Rockstar Social Club account when LA Noir was, you know, a thing. And I've sent password resets from their website to every email address I can imagine I would have signed up with it, and I have yet to receive a password reset, so I'm thinking I'm going to have to create a new account if I want to play GTA 5 online.
So if anybody here who's listening has received loads of spam from Rockstar Social, please contact Emily and let her know what the email address is, please. Thank you. This is the end of the public announcement.
No, it's quite interesting because it's dead, supposedly, due to customer complaints.
It took them a long bloody time to listen.
Because there was that big kickoff when they first released it with the PC, wasn't there?
Mm.
Because it wouldn't let you sign in. You couldn't play the game on the PC if you downloaded it, say. I think it was on Steam, was it? You couldn't actually play it unless you logged in to,
to
the internet.
Yeah, I do have one or two Ubisoft games from Steam, and it's basically, yes, we'll download them on Steam, install them in Steam. Now, oh, you want to play it? Oh, well just the Uplay client. And, oh, for fuck's sake. And then download some bloody awful updates. And you go, well, I've got this on Steam. Why aren't you updating it on Steam? Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, there's a login problem. I can't play it.
The servers are down. Do not self-destruct.
So basically, because when you play it from the console end, it's more like, oh, look at all these cool achievements and extra bits of content you can get when you're signed in with your Uplay account. And actually, it's just kind of like,
I've never unlocked one of them damn achievements.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how I did it.
Yeah, I've unlocked a couple. Paul did a load on, was it San Francisco Driver?
Driver Sansom.
So Driver San Francisco, like, sort of ages back. And yeah, it was just like, okay. I unlocked a couple when I did Split Cell Blacklist and the Wii U. Because that was the last Ubisoft game I played.
What about Zombie U?
I don't think I bothered logging into my account.
Oh, right, okay.
I was during the period of, I can't, it wasn't letting me reset passwords and stuff. I was just like, fuck you.
You know it's bad when they're offering to give you free things and actually put off having those free things because you have to use and log into their service.
I did download some backgrounds for Murphy60.
Am I right in thinking it was, at least on the PC, more of a sort of like way of ensuring DRM crappiness? Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. On the PC, it's, bless them, they're trying desperately, because you get a code. If you buy a PC game, you know, from Uplay, from Ubisoft, you get a Uplay code in the box. Yeah. So you can install it, but then you can't play it. You have to log into your Uplay account, put in the code, it will validate it. And it's got a separate friends list and a separate achievements list and everything like that. And it's like, Jesus Christ, why would I bother? It's this whole pseudo social network and achievements list, and it's only for your company's games. Why would I bother doing that?
Because you love Ubisoft.
do like a few Ubisoft games, but Uplay is just horrible.
Meanwhile, I'm wondering if there's some people at like Warner Brothers Interactive who are kind of like scratching their heads and stroking their chins and maybe looking a little bit nervous and perspiring slightly after having released Batman Arkham Origins with the WBID and then hearing this announcement from Ubisoft about Uplay this past week.
Well, I mean, I think it's actually quite telling that the supposed worst company in the US, EA, got rid of theirs or their equivalent in May.
Mm-hmm.
It's now November, and Ubisoft has just gone, oh, what? Oh, we're not doing that anymore. Oh, right, okay.
What I can see this is about is it's the whole Project $10, as they, you know, as people coined it with EA, where if you buy a game in order to get even, you know, even if you have the game legitimately and you have the game, you know, it knows you have the game legitimately, in order to get some of the features, you'll have to put in an extra code to try and dissuade you from buying pre-owned games.
Mm.
So you'd have the game, and it's legitimate. It's right there, but you don't have all of it.
Yeah.
Now, Arkham City, this as well. You're saying about Arkham Origins. Mm. Arkham City had this with the Catwoman code. So this is continuation, and it's the content is right there, but no, we're not going to let you have it. And it's been a very shitty trend that I have not approved of.
I have to admit,
it's proven to just backfire on him as well, to be fair, which is a good thing.
I was lucky that the game store in Truro still existed when Arkham City came out, because obviously it was only Game and maybe somebody else who had the Catwoman DLC on launch, and some of the Robin stuff as well, and like the challenge modes. And yeah, lucky basically, because I got my pre-order and got it, but this time round no such thing was going on, so you know, it wasn't so big a deal.
I mean, it's obvious that, you know, secondhand games, the whole market's there to basically satisfy people like Game and whatnot, you know, the retailers that don't actually make that much money out of new games. So they obviously push the secondhand ones. So they're kind of squeezing both sides against each other, to be honest, because that means that they're giving no money to developers and whatnot. But by the same token, they're also actually only buying the secondhand versions off customers for a minuscule price in comparison in order to make that money. What do you reckon, you know, could be done instead to kind of to level the playing field and, you know, make sure that everybody gets the money that they actually need?
Well, the money is...
Make games cheaper.
But at the same time, if you're going to have extra content, in theory, but is actual extra content or download or whatever, actually make sure it's worthwhile, that it isn't crap. I'm not saying it has to be of the same density as the main game, but it has to be of the same quality as the main game.
Yeah.
And I would say that two companies that at least tended to do that a bit in this current, well, ending console generation and a bit on PC as well, has been something like Bethesda and BioWare, because the DLC for something like Mass Effect 2, pretty amazing. Mass Effect 1, it was a bit early on. Then with Bethesda, with like the DLC for Oblivion, that was pretty freaking good.
Mm.
And Fallout 3, the DLC for that was quite marvellous as well. And
but then with Mass Effect 3, I have the whole issue with, if you're not an Xbox Live Gold member, you can't play it online. And also that whole tie-in with the online and that affecting the galactic readiness.
That's why I didn't mention Mass Effect 3.
Fair enough then, we'll let that slide.
No, it's not.
But as an example of the whole, you know, giving incentive and, you know, things like that, recently, because the Windows Live is being shut down, because Microsoft have managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory by making it shit.
You're a poet.
To find anyone who, like, you know, who is a PC gamer and likes games for Windows Live.
I've never heard anyone say anything nice.
I doubt, you know, you might find one or two, and they'll be mysteriously, you know, silent when it comes to who do you work for.
I mean, I was pretty peeved off because my version of GTA 4, on PC from Steam, I still have to sign into Windows Games for Windows Live in order to play it, and it's...
Yeah, it's a pain in the eye. I've got a few games like that, and one of the reasons I mentioned that was that some of the games have been rolling themselves into Steam DRM rather than GIMS for Windows Live DRM. Recently, it's been things like Bioshock 2 and the Batman games. Now, they were both on sale recently, so I picked up both Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. And one of the advantages, because this, you know, this is how you treat customers. Put them on sale. They say, you know, we're converting it to Steam, so it's all Steam now. Steam achievements, no games for Windows Live stuff. But they also gave all the DLC.
Cool.
So if you bought them now, you'd get the Minerva's Den, which is an often underlooked a single player add-on for Bioshock 2, which is bloody good. And with buying Arkham City, I got things like Harley's Revenge and all the extra characters and things like that. So I've been playing through that, and it's been great. It's how you treat customers well. You put them on sale, you make the games cheap. I'll happily buy a game that I've already completed and play it through again because it's got a few extra things, which it was always, I'm not sure about paying, you know, like 800 Microsoft points or however much it was for Harley's Revenge. But I played it now. I'm pleased. I'm happy.
God, you're such a geek.
Yeah. Are you trying to move us on, Paul?
Yeah.
Okay, so that
sorry.
Yeah, so E4 have commissioned Geeks, a new reality TV show, to grace our screens. And
it looks great.
I read the synopsis for this, and I just really, really sort of thought, oh my god, really? Have they stooped to such a level that they've actually done this?
Yes.
Yeah. So the basic concept is they're going to send self-professed to renowned party places such as Ibiza and Vegas.
In the hopes of proving...
Nothing, what? Because obviously it's sending them into parties and shit and blah, blah, and...
he's invited me.
Yeah, in the hopes of getting me to just tell them to fuck the fuck off.
Well, to be honest, I think it's a bit unfair because it's like, I'm a geek, but you know what kind of clubbing I like? I like going to metal and rock nights. I'll quite happily do my own little choreographed dance to violent pornography by System of a Down. However, I probably would not want to dance around to the latest dubstep crap at some nightclub in Ibiza, because, quite frankly, that is shit, you know?
Yeah, it's
the idea that geeks don't want to do that kind of thing. It's like, well, actually... Like,
I'd prefer a mosh pit.
Seriously, it's oh, good... We're getting, you know, oh, geeks exist. Yeah, they always have. We're still getting this, let's try and socially humiliate people who aren't used to these kinds of environments. That's your idea of entertainment, is it? You know, Channel 4.
Well, I mean, to be honest, until it actually airs, I'm not entirely sure quite what angle they're going for, but at the moment, it kind of strikes me as they're kind of... Because they realise that a lot of the crowd that watches E4 like places like Ibiza and Vegas. So, you know, it's almost like they're trying to normalise them in to a certain extent.
I don't see it as that. If it was on Morphor...
Are they trying to hopefully find, like, a real-life Sheldon or something?
To be honest, like, does this mean that, unfortunately, they may take it... Well, I say take advantage. It depends how informed the individuals on the show are about what they're getting themselves into. But does this mean that they are potentially putting... Because the kind of people that are that introverted potentially have other problems. So you're potentially going to be creating a show if it's doing the whole, this isn't something somebody would normally do because they've got existing personality issues of their own. And when we say personality issues, it's like, well, what's really the norm? And all that kind of crap. Because quite frankly, going out night after night in Ibiza and downing 12 shots is perhaps not actually that normal when you think about it.
To admit, if I was dragged to a nightclub in Ibiza, there would be clubbing going on, but not of the musical variety.
I see these people as baby seals.
Appear the next morning in front of magistrates.
I'm going to listen to this podcast and call you, Retroid. Hi, this is Channel 4. We've got a program.
Because they want the most outspoken people.
Channel 4, I would love the club as well.
But I mean, it's a weird move considering this is the channel that hosts Big Bang Theory and the sister channel to the one that airs The It Crowd. So presumably they kind of understand geeks to a certain extent.
Did you see the special finale for IT Crowd where it seemed that nobody suddenly understood the kind of geeks they've been trying to portray in all the previous series of it? It was just horrible watching it a few weeks ago. It was so alien to what it had previously been. I was not impressed. There was what understanding they'd had completely vanished.
This is part of Channel 4, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
And they've just done a show where they've put loads of couples in a box to have sex while three boring farts talk about it.
And what did they call this?
The sex box.
Sex box.
Mm.
Which is
just... Maybe that's what Microsoft should have called their new console to give it a bit more of a shine.
But I think the another interesting thing is, though, is that E4 have also have another reality TV show coming out called Party House, which sees youngsters partying in an empty mansion a la kind of Skins type thing. So it's like, why would you have both the this Geeks thing as well as this kind of empty mansion party house?
Because what they haven't announced about the Party House one is that actually, it's a staged reality TV show where the contestants think they're just there to party, but they're actually going to have fake axe murderers and serial killers and stuff wandering about the mansion and making people think they've been killed off.
Reality horror!
Exactly.
That's not most haunted.
Ignore the fake murder a bit.
Oh, so you're coming to the party as well.
Yep.
But no, obviously they're kind of ignoring, you know, proper geek culture that the channel in general is, you know, apart from... Well, I would kind of argue that Big Bang Theory is mostly positive.
I have issues with the term proper geek culture, because that I would say that what a lot of geeks hold as geek culture, it's like, well, if you're from that perspective, it is, but if you're in a different area, it's a different thing, and it's just the whole, you're saying proper geek culture, and it's just like, it's about the idea of being passionate about something, because you can be a geek about football. That's why saying proper geek culture is a bit bit of an iffy term for me.
But in terms of the colloquial use of geek, maybe?
I just think with, you know, you saying that, well, surely they'd understand if they've had, you know, IT Crowd and Bang Theory.
Mm.
Now, it depends who your audience in this is. It's, are you laughing with...
What are you laughing at?
Are you laughing?
Yeah.
The geeks. Whose side are you on? Are you on Sheldon's side? Or are you on Penny's side? You know, that kind of. And I get the feeling that because they're, you know, they're E4 and they're trying to be all trendy, they're very much looking at the, we're doing the...
Yeah.
Well, Big Bang Theory, I would argue that it's more with, you know, the geek.
I would say that Big Bang Theory is more with. But I think one of the reasons that's been successful is that it's got crossover, so you don't have to be a geek to watch it.
Mm.
And I think some people, I have seen some people who watch it, and this is why, you know, the series does annoy some geeks as well. They get the feeling that it's more of the art.
Mm. Well, the only reason that they think that is because other people are kind of, that they wouldn't laugh with, are laughing with them. So it's I think it's more of an elitist type thing, to be honest.
I identify most with Leonard.
Same. He's the most, to a certain extent, he is the most likable character.
Meanwhile, what's her face, the other woman that works at the university, if I was going to identify with a female character?
Oh, Leslie Winkle.
Yeah, I identify with Leslie Winkle.
Her who was in Roseanne.
Sarah Gilbert.
Mm.
So is Leonard.
One thing that
he was actually Darlene's boyfriend.
The one thing that I find interesting about the show coming out now is the fact that over in the US, Sci-Fi has had a reality TV show set around geeks. I mean, at least that was on the Sci-Fi channel. And that was more almost like kind of like an apprentice, but the apprentice, but for geeks, in trying to get them to do crazy interny things to do with, is it Kamikaze Con? It was on this, like the con happened this weekend, and it's like Stanley and a couple of other big names are kind of like behind it and invested in it, and the whole show was set up to kind of be half, look like it was a half praise wagon for like Stan, like his name was like the most revered thing of all of geekdom rather, and everyone was trying to like impress him and stuff with whatever they were doing, but that was actually them involved in geek culture as part of a reality TV show, whereas this is just fish out of water.
I've got a question.
Yes, exactly. It's pretty much, ha ha ha, they don't do this. Ha ha ha, let's see them get scared.
I've got a question, though.
Reality TV.
I've got a question, though. When it comes to geeks and portrayal of whatnot, would it be more demeaning to show them in places like Ibiza and Vegas, or would it be more demeaning to actually show them what they're like in, say, for example, San Diego Comic-Con?
Got issues with both.
So how...
And that's why it's not easy.
Okay.
It's just, if they had something which had geeks and it was about the passion for, you know, what
passion of the geek.
Passion of the geek. Fernando likes the passion of the geek. If it was something like that and just, you know, how, you know, interesting and how it was and how this person was interested in it and, you know, why they were interested in it, then great. But just have a similar thing to if people who were onto the party and if you put them at a hacker conference or something. It would be exactly the same kind of thing, because it's just take something, you know, that someone's passionate about to someone else that they're not. And then let's see how they react, and let's get our enjoyment out of their reaction.
Absolutely. The thing that troubles me about a lot of reality TV, where there's the whole mixing of pool and/or cultures with things that they wouldn't normally mix with, is that it tries to big up what society sees as normal, and then the other thing. You know, so it's like geek culture. Well, it seems to have been accepted a lot, and certainly in things like the box office.
Only to an extent.
It's been kind of accepted, but obviously not the Oscars or something. It hasn't been accepted, except for some of like VFX.
Well, the Oscars, come on.
Yeah, but I'm just saying. I'm saying that it's still quite other to most people.
It is, and it's they've found some semi-acceptable other that they can say yes, heroes. They're unacceptable because they make money. Other, and you know that can enjoy that if you want. Now thinking there, there was a series I used to watch. You know, it was on a few years ago, and I think it was on Channel 4. I don't know if anyone else watched it. It was Living with the Enemy. Anyone see that?
Nope.
Or it could have been on BBC too. But the idea was you take people of opposing views. For example, a huntsman go live with hunt saboteurs, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And if it was something like that, where you'd get people from, you know, different spheres, and you'd get them to kind of see things from another perspective. If it was done like that, then okay. But I very much doubt it.
It sounds to me a bit like that 30 Days series with Morgan Spurlock.
Mm.
That was very similar.
Yeah. But
that was very similar to Living with the Enemy.
I mean, you could imagine it's sort of like a Trekkie goes to live with Star Wars fans for, you know, like a week.
I think it would be longer than it should be longer in the week, and then we'll actually see that through the microcosm of fan-on-fan hatred that the technologies envisioned in both would actually become reality. And thus war would be raged.
It's either that or some sort of, you know, new thing would emerge where it's like, oh yes, I'm kind of beaming around the universe, but Picard's my father.
or could get a Star Trek fan, I can't think of, you know, who I could be talking about here, living with J.J. Abrams and talking about what he's done to the new Star Trek.
I think you just deafened everyone, Paul.
I'm sorry. Have you still got that axe? Because if so, we'll have to take it away.
I was just thinking, just going back to the subject of this evil commission show, the geeks one in of itself, the fact that they're meant to be going to renowned party places such as Ibiza and or Vegas, and it's kind of like, I hate to be the person having to sign up for the insurance in this, for production, because they're not the safest places in the world to go and have fun.
Not really, no. Especially Vegas.
Yeah.
Because at least we know with Vegas, there's not going to be any crime going on there. Maybe it's famously clean.
Maybe they were planning to do a sequel. I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Because I've archived your Facebook updates.
I'm going to morph this conversation into something else now.
Oh, I thought my joke was bad.
I thought I could outdo it for badness.
Morphing on.
So, who remembers Morph? I'm sure we all remember.
Oh, yes.
Yay!
Let's see, is there a chance we have younger listeners? There's a slight chance, I suppose. I'm an animation studio, the guys that make Wallace and Gromit, Shaun the Sheep, blah, yeah. blah. Before all that, they made this thing, Morph. And, my main encounters with Morph were as part of a segment to, was it Tony Hart's art programs?
Mm.
Yes.
And this was a while ago. And basically, he was this little clay dude. No, sorry, plasticine dude who'd, like, go around with a couple of other plasticine friends and get up to all sorts of mischief, usually with a slight art edge to it a lot of the time because of being with Tony Hart, but there were episodes and segments that weren't. And it was, you know, just all kind of stop-motion, plasticine-y type shenanigans.
Great. Morph was awesome.
Very funny.
His friend wasn't, though.
No. What was he called?
Oh, wait, I had a few names.
And I just love the voices that they had. So, kind of similar to Pingu, actually, in a way.
You things could get quite violent as well in it at times. Like, you could never realise that Plasticine could be so violent.
Who would win in a fight between Morph and Pingu?
Oh my god. That's a celebrity deathmatch that needs to be done.
Yes!
Let's bring back celebrity deathmatch and have two Plasticine characters actually go head to head. That would be brilliant. I'm the only person who wants celebrity deathmatch back. Oh, okay.
No, no, no. You're not the only person.
But basically, Armin are aiming to bring, obviously, the Morph back through a Kickstarter funding project, which is just sort of launched in the past week. It's to create the all-new Adventures of Morph. And they're still going to go with traditional stop-motion animation via Plasticine. The episodes would actually come out online. And if their target is met, they're hoping that production would start January next year. And then they'd start airing them from July.
Or by July.
Or by July. And it'd be something like, was it 12 episodes, lasting a minute each. And obviously, like any Kickstarter, there are various rewards. Apparently, though, if you have £1,500 going spare, you could be turned into a character to appear in one of the episodes.
At least I presume that's what they meant on the Kickstarter.
I would hope so, if you're handing over £1,500. What are they actually looking for total, though? Did you see?
Oh, no, I didn't actually see.
75,000 or something.
75. That's not the most ambitious bring something back.
No.
I'm just trying to think, though, what was the let's try and do some kind of filmy pitch thing for Hannah Montana? Well, no, it wasn't Hannah Montana. Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
What was that? That was something. That was more than 75,000 quid.
Well, I know they generated a good couple of million, didn't they?
But I think they were asking for less than that, but it was still more than what they're asking for Morph here for Armin. It's interesting that they're doing this like in this way, because it makes... Because obviously, when the tax breaks announcements happened, was it earlier this year or was it last year? When the Conservatives and Lib Dems said in one of the budget announcements much earlier in the year, and like I said, maybe last year, that tax relief was coming to both video games, to video games, and they also said animation as well, was going to be classed under this. And it does make me wonder if this would actually be able to benefit from this. But then again, the whole thing with the tax rates that they tried to announce outside of film during that budget announcement last year or so, has all been mired in, does it go against EU regulations regarding tax breaks for industries? And it's still not 100% set in stone, even for video games, whether or not it's okay. But like I said, I'm not entirely sure about the status of animation, but it was something they were working towards. So if they're asking for 75,000, it's like, okay, that's cool. Are you hoping that you're going to get some kind of tax breaks with this as well?
Well, I mean,
it's going to be the full amount that they need.
I'm not sure how Kickstarter kind of corresponds to that, because presumably the tax breaks would be to do with kind of conventional means of...
Well, no, because you still get taxed or money raised by Kickstarter. You know, you still got to, at the end of the day, square it some way with HMRC. it's just kind of... Just something to think about. But I'm not that I'm like against Morph coming back as a thing.
You're not Morphist.
I'm not Morphist. I'm just, concerned about the technicalities, because it's a Kickstarter and it's the first time that somebody like Armin over here, so an established entertainment name from the UK, and, and when I say established, I mean, this is more established than guys who wanted Dizzy brought back.
Oh yeah, what's now or was Blitz Games?
Yeah, it's a proper household name that's using Kickstarter to essentially create a media project.
Which is kind of worrying if you think about it.
But you see, that's it. I mean, the reason the tax breaks through animation were being brought through was because animation over here was a load of it. The industry's like died back quite a bit. Because we haven't been competitive internationally in terms of pricing that pretty much all the animated kids shows now are done outside of the country. You know, it's sourced abroad, or it's just redubbed versions of shows done in America or Mexico or something.
With you saying that, I recently listened to a radio documentary. I think it was a repeat. It was the story of Cosgrove Hall, of Count Duckula, Danger Mouse, Victor and Hugo, Bungalows and Crime,
yeah.
You know, various things like that, various cartoon series. Apparently, Danger Mouse still holds a record for viewing figures for one of its episodes, I think.
Wow.
Sort of withered away a little bit, and then ITV had shuttered them because ITV owned them. And then they've recently come back. I think actual Cosgrove bloke was saying, well, you know, it would be great if we could do these things again. No one else is doing them. Shall we start again? And so Cosgrove is now back in operation.
Yay!
I'm not sure what they're working on, but yeah, it seems to be internet is a new territory that they can exploit, because yeah. if you rely on just broadcast TV, it can be a bit of a problem, but as things like Simon's Cat shows can get popular on the net, can be a way to actually get work and get commissions.
Mm.
Little hijack over now.
Okay, I think we'll move on now to our feature for this week. And Paul wanted to raise the question.
Blaming me?
I am blaming you. Paul wanted to raise the question, are we expecting too much from gaming with the launches of Xbox One and PS4 just around the corner?
Well, because I mean, I've seen quite a few opinions on the internet where people have kind of turned around and said, you know...
Opinions on the internet?
Yeah. But, like, previously, throughout different generations, they've been, like, wowed by the new consoles that are coming up, you know, new, you know, graphics, you know, new controller systems and whatnot, and, yeah... This one, it just seems to be like, it's tiny bit better. Tiny bit. A little bit. Is it worth it?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Now, for some reason, I've got an opinion on this. No, we're not expecting too much. And I think to an extent, both console manufacturers are trying to pull the fast one. One of them far more than the other. Hello, Microsoft.
Okay.
Not
so,
Microsoft.
I know, it's shocking, isn't it?
Not really.
Is this at all related to our previous discussion about screen resolution? Resolution sizes.
Partially related to that, seeing as machines are effectively PCs with custom OSs. All they are. There's some slight differences.
And the main drawback is they're not upgradable.
They're not upgradable. One of the advantages of consoles has always been that they're a set hardware spec. So as a consequence, if you compare launch games to PS3 games that are coming out now, and launch 360 games to games that are coming out on the 360 now, there's a hell of a step up. Some of them look like they're on different machines, simply because they know how to squeeze the most possible. But yeah, both platforms are, they're not exactly cutting edge PC tech. And in previous generations, while, you know, they weren't, you know, ooh, yeah, that's a bit more than you get in a PC, but yeah, at least comparable, in my mind, to, you know, reasonably high-end PCs. These ones aren't, really, and I've got a feeling they've wanted to make them cheap, so they're all integrated, so they want another long generation, just like they have, you know, with this one, and Quince, they're just not as wow as they should be.
I think for me, personally, me from running out and pre-ordering on this occasion, because I haven't pre-ordered any of them yet, is the actual launch games as well.
Mm.
The majority of games that I want to play are coming out on the existing consoles. So straight away, my little brain is going, why am I paying £300 for something when I can already play it?
Just for £300, you're being very optimistic there.
Well, of course, it was just to throw in the figure for you, like. But my attitude is, I can just spend £40 and still playing it's the same game, but with less fancy graphics.
Mm. Well,
yeah,
I mean,
whereas I'm in the boat where I've got both, you know, 360 and PS3, so I've got the, you know, that, and I've got a PC as well. So
I think to a certain extent, a lot of people are beginning to feel that, well, there's not that much special going on with the Xbox One or PS4. You know, it's like, if you actually cared about the graphics, you'd be a PC gamer anyway, and you'd be like constantly upgrading your PC in order to play the, you know, better games at, you know, better qualities.
Absolutely.
So,
I mean, I will be end up buying a next-gen console.
Oh, it's inevitable. I'll end up with them as well.
But
there's going to be games that I want.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I've got to be honest, at the moment, the biggest draw for me is the PS4, because although it's only a slight step up, features like Party Chat and the new OS just do make it look a lot more refined than the PS3 does at the moment.
Well, I mean,
people just screw me, but they just seem, instantly pose a better features, which I already enjoy to some degree on the Xbox 360, and it'd be nice to use PSN for it.
Well, I mean, as with me and Em have previously said before, when it comes to the new consoles, part of the reason that we're not getting them is because they're not backwards compatible.
Oh, you know, yeah, so, yeah, that to me, it's oh, thanks very much. You give me a good reason to not bother because I have no investment. All the stuff I bought, current formats, is just written off. Now, I've said previously, one of the things which I like is that Sony are doing some of the cross-buy. They're extending the idea. Things like Journey and Flower, if you bought those on, you know, because they were download titles.
Yeah.
Bought those on PS3. Doing new versions, PS4, you will get those included. You get those for free if you've already got, you know, the PS3 versions. So that's a way of giving an investment, but otherwise, if stuff I own, none of it will work. It will work on the existing things I've got. Why would I bother?
But I mean, the thing is, though, is that consoles nowadays are not built the same as with the 8-bit and the 16-bit era. You know, there's still, you know, N64s, still NESs working absolutely fine today.
Yeah.
You know, in years' time, how many Xbox 360s are going to crash?
Actually, speaking of PS3s dying, one of our hex writers, PS3, sort of kicked the bucket.
A launch one as well.
Yeah,
so.
This past week. So, yeah.
My experience with launch PS3s has not been good. I've said before, I've got a total in this house, I've got 4 PS3s. Two of them being the at least semi-backwards compatible gig launch versions. Both of those are dead. Wow. So excellent hardware.
I
have the same problems with the launch 360s as well. So it's not as if, you know, I'm raining on the PS3 parade. It's just, yeah, generation that we're coming to the end of, the launch hardware was flaky.
I am worried about how the longevity of the new consoles is going to hold up, at least from the launch SKUs, because like if we have all of that over again, it was expensive for both companies, and it obviously knocked confidence in the hardware for quite a while early on. So it's kind of like, you know, are they going to resolve this issue? Just make sure that they avoid it.
Yeah, I don't think there will be issues like that for several reasons. One, they're both PCs. Two, they've both gone, ooh, that was a bit pricey and crap, wasn't it? Let's not do that again. Oh, and another one being part of the reason for the whole machine failure was that they were transitioning from, was it high lead solder?
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons because when I looked into it, a lot of graphics cards, which were coming out at the time, were also failing due to very similar issues. But because, of course, the 360 was, you know, the one that was being most visible, that one got most. So it was the industry, it was the electronics industry going from, you know, one third of solder to another. And that was causing a lot of the issues where they weren't getting the mix right. And, you know, the temperature fluctuations in turning a machine on and turning it off and all that kind of thing was just so... There were a lot of failures. We don't have that issue anymore. So, you know, there's three good reasons why it won't. They're both new hardware as well, so it's like, yeah. But
I think this is the part in the show when we move on to the Wii U and I cringe and you do your worst, Retroid. Just get it out of the way.
Well, I thought we were talking about the next generation.
Come on, that isn't your worst. That isn't your worst.
Well, I kind of like the Wii U, but I just think it's massively overpriced. And
I like the idea of the Wii U. I just don't think there's enough third-party games to tempt me at the moment. They need
£150.
They need the support.
They do need the support.
They seem to have pissed off several companies.
Well, they seem to have pissed off several companies.
Including EA.
Companies. Yeah. That worked out well for the Dreamcast. Not having EA on your side always works out well. They are one of the kings of multi-platform, and if you don't have them on their side, I mean, good God, bad thing. Yeah, I like the Wii U. It's just, you know, for the hardware that's in it, it's got more RAM, that's it.
Well, to be honest, I mean, we were saying earlier on that, you know, there's not that much difference between, say, for example, the Xbox 360 and the Xbox One or the PS3 and the PS4. So is it really that much of an issue, do you reckon? I mean, is it more of an issue than the difference between a Wii and an Xbox 360?
The Wii was more differentiated controller with Waggle. It had all that. You know, you had the grannies on the news playing bowling. All that kind of thing. And it was great. That was fantastic. It did bring gaming to a lot of people who would otherwise not.
Yeah.
I think they've peeled off the controller with the Wii.
Well, the tablet controller.
And I also think it's too expensive, and I appreciate that it has to be more... You know, they can't... You know, Nintendo sell their hardware for a profit.
Can I just ask, have you actually tried a Wii U, like with a controller and whatnot?
Yeah. Gamepad.
And what did you think of the gamepad? Well, when actually playing games?
Thought it was too big.
Too big?
Too too big.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was okay, but I just think, you know, well, you know, oh, you've got a screen on the controller. I'm going to have to look away to use it. Why don't you just have, you know, if I press and go onto a screen, which is very similar to, you know, most of the things I would do on this controller.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have to look away from the main display. It's like, yes, you can do some nice things with it. But most of the time, don't games have you know, either inventory screens or map screens or options? Or
to be fair, though, I mean, from the games that I have played, it is quite useful. It does speed the game along, and in the case of Zombie U, it actually adds to it because, you know, you've got the inventory all there, whatever, and it's doing it in real time, and it's doing it in a way that isn't like, say, for example, Resident Evil 5, where, you know, if you're kind of selecting whichever, you know, item and whatnot, then there's still stuff going on. With the Wii U, it's like, if you know where stuff is and you know where to put your finger, you can basically, I don't know, equip another item without having to take your eyes away from the screen. Not something that I've done before, but it's, you know, possibility.
My whole issue with the Wii U is pretty much down to price.
That's fair enough.
I think if it launched at about the same price, PS3 and the 360R, and it had the same games coming out for it, I just think that, you know, them trying to position it as, you know, it's a new generation machine is a mistake. I just think it's overpriced for what it is, and the controller is the only tangible thing it has over PS3 and 360. No, it's not enough of a draw for me, especially when it launched with so many games that were just ports. And I can get that for £15 on a machine I already own, or I can pay over £300 and get that for £55.
Ooh. Yeah, I can kind of agree with that to a certain extent, though I don't necessarily blame Nintendo for it. I blame, you know, basically the companies that think that if they publish a game now, then they should sell this many copies no matter what.
Well, yeah, to an extent. I think they're all to blame.
Okay.
I think it needed to come in for a good price, and it wasn't at a good enough price. I mean, there's only, what, about £30 difference between a PS4 and a Wii U? Yeah, right.
Really?
Well, is the premium Wii U, I think I've still seen it selling for about £320, or is it?
£320? I'm pretty sure that's really expensive for a Wii U, even the premium version.
It may well be cheaper now, but I think I was still seeing them in game being sold for the RRP.
Good old game.
Yeah, good old game. And I know that's game, but they sell at the either the RRP or the suggested retail price. Mm. So yeah, when you look at the technology, it's like, yes, I've just said that the next generation machines that are coming out are powered really for what they should be. Which they are, over and above what you get in the Wii U.
At the same time, everyone just seems to, apart from Nintendo, because they've been their thing too, but focusing on basically graphics more than anything else still.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it just seems, we've got to the stage, and I think we've said this before, where we're kind of uncanny valley kind of stage. And it's just like, you don't necessarily want stuff too realistic, because it's going to start making the players feel a bit...
Especially when things go wrong, like glitches. I mean, if you've got something that's photorealistic and it's glitching, it just freaks you out.
So,
I mean, there was a video from Corridor Digital that was about... It wasn't necessarily about that thing, but it's basically a live-action version of what happens in kind of glitches in games. And that got really, really freaky.
But what I'm basically saying is that I would be far more excited about the upcoming generation if they weren't focusing on graphics, if they were focusing on what happened underneath everything a bit more in terms of AI. I really think...
Well, they are as well, but the launch games are not going to be the way to show that off.
No. It just doesn't seem like the main thing. Like, they could, but they're not pushing for it as much. And it's just like, just shut up about the photorealism. I want to know whether or not, if I go and start shooting at a bunch of things, whether they're going to really think intelligently about how to handle my character.
As an example with that kind of thing, one of the reasons that console games at the moment look as nice as they do is that they know how to funnel people down a very thin corridor.
Mm.
And they only have a very small area of the world being worked on at once. More or less the cone in front of you with a few, you know, with a bit left and right.
Yeah.
Now, it's all fine if you're just wanting to have that illusion. But if you're wanting more things going on, those things have to exist outside that vision cone. And those things have to be processed. Those things have to have resources to them. And those things can only really be done with more RAM, more cores, more processing power, and graphical power to throw at them as well. Because there's, you know, variations, all of those things cost. And I think playing something like GTA 5 is a good example of how incredibly good they've got. We're using, what's the expression, quart into a pint pot? you're getting far more out of the hardware than you should really play, because they know they have to, but they have reached the point now where the game worlds are screaming for more. I mean, as an example, you drive around, you know, Los Angeles, traffic to the, you know, the traffic you're faced with in GTA 5.
Yeah.
The traffic is as it is in GTA 5 because they can't afford more cars on the roads, all of that kind of thing. All these things are expensive.
So do you think games in general are getting more stale? So they're, you know, kind of sticking to the genres a bit too much, and outside of the indie scene at least, that they're becoming, you know, almost samey?
Yes. That's always been a cycle. I know that was a very quick, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like in this era, were there too many platformer games? Yes. Mm. In the 16-bit era, were there too many scrolling shoot-em-ups and, scrolling beat-em-ups?
Never.
Yes. yeah. Hello, Capcom. How are you doing there with your scrolling beat-em-ups?
And they're still doing it, though, aren't they?
Yeah, just not as much. And now it's, you know, for the last two generations at least, it's been FPS.
Shooters, yeah.
Yeah, and there's only so much you can do with those.
To be fair, though, I mean, I think action games, because they're not kind of based on the mechanic itself, I think they've become more... They're there more, but you don't necessarily notice them as much, if you know what I mean. So stuff like Devil May Cry style type stuff.
Yeah. All these big companies, all these big publishers, they're throwing huge amounts of money at developers, time they wholly own, so they can just, you know, stand there cracking the whip at them and saying, no, this has to be out at a certain time. And if, you know, if you don't get a certain Metacritic score and sell, you know, X million copies, we will fold you.
Yeah, like, even if you do well, then we might still fold you.
Yeah.
At times.
Yeah, has happened. So they want safe, happening with film as well. You know, how many superhero and, you know...
Or just sequelizational.
Yes, exactly. They want it safe. So outside of the indie community, there's been a few risks that companies have taken, like Ubisoft with Assassin's Creed, but look at how they're, you know, plowing those into the yearly updates.
I mean, one...
iteration.
It's a bit ridiculous how one generation of consoles, no matter how long it is, has... four direct in the main line and countless spin-offs.
I suppose the issue is that part of the issue here is that the mid-range game has kind of begun disappearing in this generation. Like you're saying, with the whole they're not taking risks and stuff, and it's just kind of completely gone.
Yeah, anything that's actually just mediocre just kind of gets left to the side.
I mean, for instance, I would say that it could be a while before anything like Spec Ops The Line appears on Xbox One or PS4. I'm not saying like that get but something akin to it, because it was technically a mid-range game. Mm. But it was very in ways that were not to do with its mechanics. Basically.
I just think we've been replaced with a, you know, even more so this generation, a big blockbuster mentality. And I think that's why there's been so, you know, such an explosion in indie games. And why there are so many people, you know, doing Kickstarters and, you know, things like that on, you know, PC and console. They just want to have from this big, you know, you must plow these things out and it must be safe.
I think to a certain extent, genres have kind of merged quite a bit as well. I mean, how many, you know, not necessarily traditional first-person shooters, but first-person shooter games actually have RPG elements to it. I mean, even Batman does, you know.
Yeah. Mind you, that's a person game.
Metroid-y.
Yeah.
Far Cry 3.
Yeah.
You know, what about Bioshock?
Mm.
That has, like, upgrades and shop system and whatnot. So I think to a certain extent, they're kind of trying to put too much into games, I suppose.
I would say a good example of putting too much into games would be Ubisoft with things like the Assassin's Creed. It's like, you know, let's have a tower defense mode. Let's not.
There we go. I think the mini games in GTA, the GTA series in general, are actually, yeah.
I suppose it's, but yeah, but the thing about mini games, if we're just going to sidetrack onto that for a minute, the thing about mini games is how much of it is willing on your part as a player, like, because if you're forced to play them in order to progress the story, that's not so fun. That's not so fun at all. It should be presented to you. You could go and do this thing, or you can continue on with the main stuff.
If you have the free, if you have the option, then great. If it's a now it's time for that game.
Isn't it quite ironic, though? I mean, I like mini games, don't get me wrong, but isn't it quite ironic that you're now actually having to have mini games and games to escape from the main game?
That's something.
One of the reasons you play games, reality.
I have thought a few times, in years ago, I would have been playing this game for the game. You know, this you know, this mini game here would have been the game I was playing.
Well, I mean,
in some ways, in some games, I prefer to the mini game.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, there's certain games, like, say, for example, Blitzball in Final Fantasy X, that was brilliant. Triple Triad in Final Fantasy VIII, that was actually pretty good as well. Bioshock, with its kind of hacking system with the water and whatnot, I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't necessarily say that it's, you know, to everybody's taste. But yeah, there's some mini games.
I have played that game separately. The Bioshock hacking thing. I recognise this from the 16 bits.
So wait, are we saying that we're going to hold the fate of the Xbox One and the PS4 and the judgment of this upon its playing with mini games? Like, how do they handle mini games in the upcoming generation?
I'll play the mini games on Swipe. The Xbox One. You'll be able to just swipe the main game onto a smaller screen and I'll play this mini game instead on the browser. Ooh, it'll be all exciting. we've needed the new hardware, and the new hardware is nice, thank you very much. It's not as really, although, saying this to some friends earlier, because there are so many GPU cores in these new machines, more so in the PS4. It's going to be interesting because the GPUs are going to be doing some of the processing that the CPU cores would otherwise have done. Blimey. So they're going to be see some interesting the new hardware that were with the consoles that we've all had for years.
Yeah.
And the games are great, and we've all been enjoying the games. It's just we would like to see more interesting things done.
More variety.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think to a certain
either.
I think because I've been a little like other gamers that have kind of moved away from gaming in general. It's not that I've given up gaming, it's just that I've lost as much enthusiasm for it as I used to have. How do you think game developers should actually bring them back?
Question at all, that.
About one, making sure those mini games are optional.
I think DLC and pre-order bonuses, that's definitely the way to go.
Shoot him. Shoot right now for saying that. Bloody hell.
And making sure... And stop relying on escort missions and quick time events.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
If that's... escort missions obviously existed before this generation. However, they still seem to have been quite abused during this generation that we're just leaving. And meanwhile, QuickTime events kind of surfaced and nobody's left them the hell alone and they just keep using them. And it's like, please stop it with the QuickTime events. We don't need... What, you want to show us a cinematic moment? We don't need to interact with the cinematic moment. There's no point. Just show us the stupid cinematic moment if you want a cinematic moment. Don't make me press stupid buttons at stupid times because that's not playing a game, that's making me push stupid buttons at stupid bloody times.
So you want more quick time in games then? Yeah, that's what I got from that. Yeah, I've put on my marketing, my big publisher hat.
Mass Effect 4 has to be quick time all the way through.
Do you want to know the when I realised quick time events were a terrible idea? The exact moment when I realised this.
Bourne Legacy.
No, when I played Dragon's Lair in the arcade.
Oh, God, yeah.
That was the time events. That was entirely quick time events. And
I remember
not
that.
Bloody learned from that.
Or Road Avenger.
Can I just say that the angrier that Emily gets, the more posh she sounds.
I don't know what you're talking about.
For me, what I'd like to really see, I mean, we've touched on it with the indie games and that, but I do want to see more guests more emotions brought to the forefront, more emotional journeys, like funny enough Journey did for me, because that was just an experience playing that for the first 2 hours. It's just an experience that I've not been able to replicate since.
Those are the kinds of things that games can do and films
can't.
Well, films can, but they do it in a completely different way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a completely different experience when you're doing something and it, you know, that occurs.
So are we saying that actually we want more non-linear narratives, as it were? Kind of, you're not going down that corridor
Not
in one direction.
more interesting things done, because there are things you can do in games, and there are things you can do, you know, if you've got more powerful command to can enable you to do these things in game worlds, and that's a completely different thing.
Well, I mean,
to
a certain extent, I would actually argue that more choice in games kind of takes away from the emotional impact at times with the story. You know, because a lot of the time, if you've got choices in games, it can be quite difficult to make sure that you've got you've still got that emotional kind of roadblock, as it were, that you can't, you know, nip around. You know what I mean?
You need to obviously play Walking Dead.
Well, that...
Because you've already watched me play bits and dabs.
Yeah, but I mean, there's freedom in terms of that type of thing, where it's like, you do this or you do that. And there's kind of freedom in terms of, oh, well, I'm going to go to this place, I'm going to meet this person, I'm going to go to this place next, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and basically just, yeah, do almost like a sandbox, do whatever you want type thing.
Yeah, but the thing is that you, it's not do whatever, because you're still making choices. Like in Fallout 3, choices are made which affect how things happen when you go to different bits of the sandbox. Like in real life, if you've somehow picked up a reputation for being an asshat somewhere, this reputation may carry on further. Same happened, obviously it's Bethesda, but that is something that definitely happened in Oblivion, and Fallout 3. Skyrim, it felt like they kind of cut that back a bit, but it was still potentially a thing. So the idea is that you can have, it's not just the choice of going where you go, it's how your interactions with in-game characters affect that journey and any subsequent journeys you may make from that point. He's pursing his lips there and crinkling up his eyes.
It's almost the starting point can be defined, the ending point can be defined. It's the journey and the options you can make within that, which are the important thing, and what can be, you know, affected by that.
I'm just kind of noting that, you know, that some of the most emotional storylines that I've, you know, kind of experienced have been fairly linear. That's what I'm kind of getting at. I mean, stuff like Final Fantasy VII, you know, that was obviously, you know, very linear, and you know, you have to watch Aeris be killed by Sephiroth. There's no kind of way around that.
But you know what? I preferred 8 because there were some more interesting narrative moments, because choices you made earlier in the game affected conversations later on. And thus the emotions that Squall felt at the time and that were therefore conveyed to you as the player. So, you know, narrative. And also, actually, if you play something like, is it the Persona games? Obviously, you know, not as big in the West as something like Final Fantasy's become. Maybe it's getting there. But that's always been a lot about choice, and that's a series that's been running for quite a while. So
okay, well, I mean, in terms of kind of setting the worlds or setting the gaming world to rights, how do you think gaming should go in terms of, you know, kind of story and whatnot?
I think it should be more forgiving of difference, and there should be more variety. Definitely. I mean, you're saying that about Persona, excellent example of, just because it hasn't, you know, been big in the West, please publish it just there as a nice big, you don't even have to print the covers and press the discs anymore. Give us the choice of variety that, and you, it might surprise you.
And obviously make sure that your localization isn't a complete hatchet job.
Yeah, because English is a really niche language. And just come on, you can patch languages in it later. We can't possibly release a game in Europe because we'd have to translate into all the other languages. No, you don't, because quite a few people in Europe speak English. And if something sells well in Europe, you might think about, translate the script into all these other European languages, but maybe just do it as text. You've got those possibilities now. Yeah. You know, give us the option. Hello, Namco.
You're just naming and shaming companies today, aren't you?
I wouldn't stop. Yeah, especially Namco. It's like, come on. Tales of games, which are, you know, I've quite liked, you know, several of them. Mm-hmm. So let's see them digitally now, okay?
I'm afraid that that's really all we've got time for this week after this impassioned discussion about next gen.
Passion and despair, and then passion again, and then
going
through all the stages.
Have we gone through all the stages of grief?
Denial?
Have we had denial yet?
No, I don't think we have.
No, we haven't.
Yeah, we have with Wii U.
You're getting in on the Wii U bashing as well.
Okay.
That serves a high five, Retro.
All right. So it's bye from...
Good night from me, Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter. And by the way, my name is Paul Wood. I got that the wrong way around.
And it's good night for me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter, and you can find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
And it's good night for me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night for me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter as EK6891. You can also maybe stop by drowninginmultimedia.co.uk, which probably for the next few weeks will involve short posts from me going, oh my god, why am I doing NaNoWriMo? You can find Nerd Assemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. We're on Twitter as Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerd Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to go and check out the hexdimension.com. We've had an interview with Jock, the guy that's done so many cool things.
Savage Wolverine?
Savage Wolverine is a current thing where he's done art and writing for the first time. He's previously drawn Dread, he's drawn Hellblazer, he did the concept art for Dread the film, plus the storyboard. He's amazing, he's a lovely chap. There's respect there, and we've got a video interview with him up on the site that's gone up this week.
That's why we seem to be befriending people that have worked on Dread.
Eventually, we will somehow have befriended everyone on the VFX crew, and then maybe the writer, maybe the director. Yeah, we'll just slowly work our way through the hundreds upon hundreds of people that worked on the film.
We'll be really bragging when we add Carl Urban to our Facebook, though.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what will happen?
I'll be an extra in the next film as a dead man.
Yay!
You'll befriend everyone involved with Dread, and then unfortunately, you're busted for having not only sugar but coffee.
Oh, that is all.
I can just imagine Judge Cookie. Judge Cookie.
Don't bring me into this.
Go on, Judge Red.
That is all. Good night.
Good night.
Night.
I am the law.
I wouldn't be able to say that, to be fair.
Hello, I'm the law. Come along.